Welcome to Latte with a Lawyer, a podcast dedicated to bringing you the stories of some of America's most successful lawyers, figuring out what makes them tick, how they creatively solve problems, and how others aspiring to be them can follow in their footsteps.
Okay, welcome to another episode of Latte with a Lawyer. I'm your host, Jonathan Brickman, and this morning, I guess, in California, we have Michael Eisenbaum with the law firm of Gray Duffy. Nice to have you, Michael.
Hey, nice to be here.
Excellent. Good. So it's still morning time there. And to go with Latte with a Lawyer, what's your morning beverage of choice?
I had tea this morning. I do a cup of green tea when I get to the office. First thing when I wake up, I have a cup of coffee because that's an essential.
Got it.
Then when I get to the office, rather than more coffee, I like a cup of tea.
There you go. Excellent. But it's funny, my son drinks tea. No one else in the family does, but he's drinking tea. So,
well, I started drinking it because, you know, you read all the health benefits of green tea, and
right,
you know, you were telling me about Tokyo earlier, and you know how, despite how populated and crowded it may be in Tokyo, they have one of the highest life expectancies of any country in the world. And you know, and I is it because of eating so much rice and drinking so much tea? Maybe.
I don't know, but you're right. I mean, I forget what the number was, like over 100. They have the highest population of centurions. I mean, they live a long time there. It's a very civilized, orderly, polite, clean. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It's the opposite of the United States.
Yeah, it's. I haven't visited, but I hope to go.
Yeah.
The next few years.
Yeah.
Maybe when I finally retire, I'll get a chance to go over there.
There you go. It was. I'd never been to that part of the world, so it was very interesting. But anyway. They have their issues too, but in terms of like just the sort of basic operational of society, it's you know, the United States is kind of messy. There it's very orderly and uniform. It's very interesting. But anyway, so let's talk about your law practice. It looks like you're a litigator, and tell us about what you do day to day.
Day to day, I've been a lawyer now over 30 years, doing pretty much the same thing the whole time, which is civil litigation,
okay.
civil trials. And it could be anything from personal injury cases to we do a lot of construction litigation cases, large property losses. I just got done with a trial a few months ago now in Orange County, on a restaurant fire, where our client was a remodeling contractor, remodeled the restaurant about 3 years before there was a fire, and they were cost $2.5 million. I mean, the restaurant was a total loss, and
yeah.
So it was like a $2.5 million claim against our client, trying to basically pin the fire, the cause of the fire, on not so much what he did, but what he didn't do during the remodel. So we rebutted that, and we were in trial for about 3 weeks in Orange County with a judge who had never done a jury trial before. He came from family law, so they do court trials. You don't get a jury in family law, right. Which even as a lawyer, I didn't know that. But because I don't do family law. So, but he actually, a little shaky, a little indecisive at first, but, you know, once things got underway, and he was actually a pretty good trial judge. But after 3 weeks of the evidence and the plaintiff making all its claims and calling experts as to why our client was responsible for this fire, the jury took about an hour to deliberate and decide it wasn't our client's fault. And so we got a defense verdict, a unanimous defense verdict. In California, in the civil courts, you only need 9 out of 12 to reach a verdict.
Okay, yep.
So as soon as 9 jurors agree one way or the other, then you have a verdict. In this case, at the first vote, they all agreed our client wasn't negligent. We weren't obligated to, in this case, change out a water heater, which is where the fire originated. And it was expressly excluded from our client's scope of work. So, you know, why they went to trial in the case, it didn't seem like a very good case from the plaintiff's perspective, but maybe they were misguided, whatever, but they went to trial. I was happy to try it. Although I will admit, as a trial lawyer, one of the scariest cases to try is the one you're expected to win, right? Because if you don't, if you win, it's like, well, that's what we expected.
Sure. You
know, not even a pat on the back. But if you lose, it's like, you must be an idiot. You don't know what you're doing. So, you know, I'd rather try a case where I'm expected to lose and then win.
Right.
And that's a little safer just from, you know, a client satisfaction standpoint.
Yeah.
But in this case, they were, you know, I guess they came up, the plaintiff came up with a plausible argument, but the jury didn't buy it, which was nice. And we had our, you know, we had our experts in response, and it was a long trial. I mean, being in trial for 3 weeks and being away from the office for 3 weeks essentially is difficult because you come back to a pile of crisis that, you know, you tried to nip in the bud before you go to trial. But things, you know, in 3 weeks' time, that's a lot for a busy law practice.
Oh, yeah. So I was going to ask you, so that was on the defense side, but you're on both sides, aren't you, on the plaintiff side as well?
Yeah, we do some plaintiff stuff for clients. So we will, you know, a lot of our work is also business litigation. So there are contract disputes between businesses, business to business, individual to business. And so there are times where we, representing clients, will have to, we will be on the plaintiff side to sue for some sort of breach of contract. I've handled a few personal injury cases on the plaintiff side, a couple that went to trial maybe 10 years ago that I did. So it's nice to be able to do and see and understand both sides of the equation.
Yeah.
It makes you well-rounded. And for me, you know, no matter what side I'm on, I know what the other side's going to do. I can see it from the beginning. I know what I would do. And sometimes the other side doesn't do that.
You know, right.
They don't, you know, they're not as attentive to their case. They just want to get a quick settlement or whatever it might be when they're the plaintiff. So,
yeah. So most of your work is it fair to say is on the defense side?
I would say 75% on the defense side.
Okay.
Overall, that's just kind of the way it plays out. A lot of our institutional clients, such as insurance companies, assign cases where their policyholders get sued.
Yep.
Typical, you know, known as the insurance defense industry.
Yeah, yeah.
So, right. You know, that definitely keeps the lights on.
Yep.
So.
What's your preference? What do you like to do? What's your favorite type of case?
You know, I do like the higher exposure property damage cases. It was probably 13, 14 years ago. I tried a landslide case in Santa Barbara on the defense side, where I represented a grading contractor that had graded a slope. Turns out part of it was over an ancient landslide. And during the heavy rains in, was it 2006 or somewhere in that range? There was a heavy flooding and a lot of mudslides, particularly up in the Montecito, Santa Barbara area. I don't know if you would remember this, the La Conchita landslide, which is right on the coast, which was a little town.
Remember that. Yeah.
Against the hillside, and the hillside literally came down and buried like 14 homes with the people in it.
Yep.
And it was almost a mass casualty event. And our trial took place shortly after that. It was the same rains that affected this other property that ended up in trial.
Okay.
And it actually came out well for our client, but for the soils engineer and the general contractor in charge of the project, not so much.
Mm. It's funny. My first, I was a civil engineer as an undergraduate, and I worked on a construction project, and there was a soil issue. And I remember the, you know, I was a young engineer. I didn't know anything, frankly, but he wanted me to solve that quicksand. So I said, you know, here's my advice: hire a good soils engineer. I have no idea what to do with that. So that,
yeah, that's tricky stuff. Well, for the first 2 years of college, I was a geology major.
Okay.
It was more of an interest than a career, I decided. So I do have a background in soils and geology, even though that was quite a long time ago, but I've always been intrigued by it, yeah. By the plant, by the, you know, the substance of the planet itself and its,
yeah,
the planet's evolution over time with weather and nature in and of itself is just kind of fascinating to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I saw you got started in Colorado. So, yeah, tell me about that, like how you went from that to becoming a lawyer and living in California, the Valley.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a happenstance story more than anything else. So as a geology major, I'm like, you know, I halfway through college, I'm like, I'm not sure I want to make a career out of this. It's more of a hobby. And I was trying to decide what to do. And I changed majors to political science after working for my local city as a summer intern, as, you know, to the city administrator. A little town called Cherry Hills Village in Colorado.
Oh, I know where that is.
Sure. Yeah, it's a suburb of Denver.
Yeah.
And I kind of enjoyed that. So I changed, you know, I changed my major to political science. And I thought, you know, I could run a city or assist in running a city and move my way up, and thought that was kind of neat. And as I was getting closer and closer to graduation, I was like, okay, do I go to graduate school in public administration or something? And was making, you know, was very indecisive, as many young college students are. And I actually overheard a friend while at a bar, a popular bar at Colorado State on Thursday nights, was the night to go out. Thursday night.
Yeah.
Thursday night at Washington's Bar was the place to be.
There you go.
And so my friend was talking to his friend about going to law school, and I could overhear this. And he even mentioned Pepperdine Law School, and that his friend or his father was best friends with the dean of admissions at Pepperdine Law School, and that he, you know, he would be a shoo-in to go to law school there because he had the political connection. And I, you know, and for some reason that just stuck in my head, and I'm like, you know, law school, Pepperdine, Malibu, California. I didn't know much about Malibu or anything. I'd heard of it. You know, I'd seen pictures, how beautiful it was. And it had a reputation, and a good one. So I thought, law school. Yeah, let's do law school. So I ended up applying, you know, a couple months later, because I was getting ready to, it was that time to start applying to whatever graduate schools and law schools, including applying to Pepperdine.
Yeah.
And other schools around the country as well, some back east, some in the south, University of Denver, which was local. Colorado State did not have a law school.
Okay.
Which was my alma mater, so I couldn't, that wasn't an option, which was.
Is that Greeley? Is that in Greeley?
No, that's University of Northern California.
Northern California. Wait, where's Colorado?
Colorado State. Colorado State's in Fort Collins.
Fort Collins.
Okay. Which is an amazing town.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right at the foothills of the Northern Colorado Mountains.
Okay.
So, you know, we would go, we'd take off Fridays from school, go fishing and things like that up in the lakes and streams and rivers. Always fun. Okay. So, but ended up applying, you know, got into a few places here and there, and got accepted at Pepperdine. Went and visited Pepperdine with my father. And since he was going to help pay for some of the first year tuition, we went and visited. And, you know, standing on the patio overlooking the city of Malibu and the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
My dad looks over to me and he goes, "Is this a hard choice for you?" No, it isn't. You know, I like this place. I accepted, you know, went to law school, did well, got a scholarship for second and third year, which supported, you know, about half the tuition. Worked as a bartender, worked as a bartender during law school to make extra money. Graduated, got a job from on-campus interviews and became a lawyer. Passed the bar the first time and off and running. That was for a big national law firm downtown that I worked at for 3 years. And, you know, downtown LA, they had a very nice office. That's kind of where I got trained. They trained me well. But I didn't like the mega law firm atmosphere. The entire 3 years I was there, the managing partner, who was also president of the Bar Association in Los Angeles, referred to me as Mark. I was just a cog, a number, you know, and even corrected him a few times. Here I am, a green lawyer, you know, intimidated by
managing
partner. But, you know, and eventually I just became known as Mark to him because I just stopped correcting him. And that was part of it. And all, you know, and it was the power base of the firm was really in New York. So you had people in New York making decisions over your career advancement that have never met you.
Right.
And so that's not what I wanted. You know, and the people, you know, I had my first trial at that firm as the second year lawyer. They let me try a case, which is unusual. I did well. It was a defense case. I defensed it. Actually, I admitted liability because we did cause the accident.
Yeah.
It was a tour bus where a guy was putting his luggage under the bus and the big heavy luggage door was open and not secured. And when he went and set his luggage on, the door came down, whacked him on the head, and knocked him out for a minute. So he did get injured. So we admitted, yeah, it was our fault. We left the door improperly fastened and unattended. And yes, we caused this man's injury, our fault. But, you know, they racked up, you know, typical plaintiff lawyer in L.A., send him for thousands and thousands of dollars of unnecessary medical treatment to manufacture a bigger case. And the jury didn't buy it. And because they overreached so much, the jury actually gave him zero.
Hmm.
So I get to trounce back to the office after that verdict with a big smile on my face. And that impressed a client so much that when I did make the move, I used that client as a reference. And that's actually what led me here at Gray Duffy originally back in 93. That same president of whatever insurance company that insured charter bus lines was their thing, also knew Gary Gray. And Gary Gray had done some work for him. And so when he saw that on my resume, they called me in for an interview. And obviously that's one of the better recommendations you can have that comes from an actual institutional client that is familiar with you, that you've done a good job for in the past. So got the job here, worked here for a while, actually left and came back. I left because a friend from law school presented an opportunity to me to open a Beverly Hills office of an up-and-coming law firm that was growing really fast. And it seemed like an opportunity that was too good to pass up.
Yeah.
I wasn't out looking for a job. You know, met with the managing partner here and just told him this is what happened. And I think I have to do it. So he appreciated that. You know, I was upfront with him and obviously didn't burn the bridge, because when that firm imploded a couple years later, I found my way back here.
Yeah. Why did that firm implode? That's interesting. What happened with it?
Well, actually, they were doing well, but the two partners, I don't know if they never really got along, but both of them had kind of tempers, for lack of a better description, and they ended up literally having a physical fight.
Jeez.
in the Orange County office. It was an Orange County firm, and so I wasn't there at the time, but they couldn't stand, you know, it became intolerable for the two of them to be partners, and they disbanded the firm almost immediately after that.
Oh my God.
And just that's when one of the partners decided he didn't even want to be a lawyer anymore. And he was a good trial lawyer. He was actually a very good trial lawyer.
Hmm.
And had developed a nice book of business from a couple of insurance companies. So
interesting. Interesting. So you've been at Gray Duffy then, aside from your little sojourn about 30 years, you've been.
Yeah, I mean, if you go all the way back to 93, minus the 2 years I was gone from like 97 to 99, I came back in 99. And it was interesting, too, because when I left, I was, you know, quite the young lawyer. And when I came back, it was kind of like I had skipped a couple rungs on the ladder, because, you know, I developed relationships with a different insurance company who was also a client here.
Yep.
It was sending me work over there, and it just kind of all came together.
There you go. There you go. Excellent. That's good stuff. Excellent. So you talked about some of your cases. Any influencers along the way that you look up to, or, you know, any books or anything like that that you would recommend?
Not so much books. Did enough reading in law school, and now
you just watch TV now. No reading.
I do like, you know, when I get done, you know, I mean, I work a long day.
Yeah.
And so when I get home, I'm pretty exhausted, and it's kind of nice to, you know, with all the streaming services on TV, there's a lot of good shows on. I don't have to, you know, somebody will recommend a show, and I'll start watching it, and I'll either like it or I won't, but you know, I don't like reality TV. I like the shows that kind of take your mind away from reality a little bit.
Right.
The drama shows, you know, like the Yellowstone series and things like
that. Oh, is that good? Yeah. Is that good?
Yeah. It's really both. You know, they did, they're on the second prequel. They did a prequel 1883. And then the current sequel is 1923 with Harrison Ford.
Okay.
As the lead character, and it's really good.
Mm.
And it's a cool show. There's a lot of drama and action and suspense that builds up in the show. And I like that kind of, you know, suspense, revenge, you know, action hero type stuff. To me, it's fun to watch.
Yeah, good stuff.
You know, and that takes my mind away.
Sure.
So that I can maintain my sanity when I come back to work.
Yeah.
Because if you're just all, you know, and I do think about work constantly, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night and go, oh shit, is that due tomorrow? Stuff like that. You know, I mean, we all keep our calendars and we know that, but, you know, so, you know, the practice of law is very tedious, time consuming, and requires a tremendous amount of attention. And now that I'm the managing partner of the firm, I have to keep track of everything and everybody to some degree.
Right.
Obviously, I could delegate a lot, and there's some people I find that are more reliable than others. I don't have to watch them as closely.
Wait, are you the sole managing partner? Do you have other?
I am the sole. I took Gary Gray stepped down effectively January 1st of 2022.
Okay.
So, which is when I took over. I had been managing partner in training for the year prior to that with him.
Okay.
So he's kind of, he is my mentor. He taught me most of what I know, certainly all of what I know about the management of a law firm. you know, running the business side of a law firm.
Yeah, talk about that, because I don't get to talk about that too much. Tell me what that is like as opposed to the day-to-day practice of law.
Yeah, so that is in and of itself a full-time job. So I really have at least two full-time jobs that I suffer with and juggle constantly. So I'm routinely getting pulled in, you know, 8, 9, 10 different directions at once. And as a managing partner in the business side of the firm, you know, make sure the clients are paying their bills so that we can pay our bills, you know, both in just the overhead of the law firm and running the cases, you know, which require a certain amount of cash flow when you're advancing costs for a lot of these clients. Sure. You get paid back, but you have to manage that very actively to make sure you don't run out of money. We are one of the few law firms, particularly of our size, which is kind of boutique size, you know, a dozen lawyers, roughly, give or take, that, you know, we do not operate on a line of credit. The firm is very well positioned financially. It's my job to maintain that. I was handed it that way. You know, a lot of firms operate with a line of credit and they're constantly having to service a debt as part of their operations. We don't have to. I have a line of credit. We've never used it.
So you have a lot of working capital that you have available.
Right.
Is that a better decision financially than using financing?
I think so, because especially now with interest rates skyrocketing, you don't have to service a debt. Why pay, you know, on a business loan, you're talking about anywhere between back in the low interest rates, it was still 6%-ish for a business loan. Now it's probably 10% or more on the business line of credit to use it.
Yep.
Why borrow hundreds of thousands of dollars and have to service that debt at 8, 9, 10% when you can maintain your own cash flow? The problem that a lot of partners and law firms have is they're always taking the money out of the law firm so that they can keep it. We leave a good chunk of the money in the law firm so that the law firm can run in and of itself without having a bank and a loan support the practice.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
It gives us a lot of flexibility.
Yeah. And do you invest it? Do you actually invest the funds when you don't need it?
Not, I mean, our operating capital, I invest my funds, but not the firm's funds, because we need access to that capital. It's not conducive to, you know, put it in, you know, stocks or bonds or annuities or any of that stuff. It just, you know, it's the operating capital of the firm, sits in a bank.
Earns
the 0.01% or interest that they've been paying, or maybe it's 0.02 now.
Yeah.
They still haven't caught up with, you know, their interest rate increases.
Yeah. Banks are the last to catch up.
Right. Funny how that works.
Yes.
So
they enjoy the spread while they do.
Right. So there's that, you know, and that takes a lot of attention. And at the same time, the marketing activities of the firm, you know, make sure we have new clients, new cases coming in to support the future.
Yeah.
I mean, we're as busy as ever right now. I just hired a lawyer. Probably going to have to hire another one. It's hard to find good help these days, quite frankly, in young, aggressive lawyers who want to work hard. They want a nice paycheck. A lot of them just, they don't want to work that hard.
Okay.
I mean, I grew up as a lawyer, you know, working my ass off to get ahead, working hard to make good money. And the programs we offer here to our lawyers give them that opportunity. The harder you work, the more money you make. It's real simple. It's a simple formula and it works. Some lawyers do it and step up and some don't. And so right now we've done, you know, our marketing activities are paying off. We've picked up a couple of fairly large institutional clients very recently that like us, like our work, sending us, you know, litigated cases. And so we handle them initially, and it's like, at this point, I can't keep up. My other partner, who's been part of that process, she can't keep up either. We try. I mean, we do everything we can, but, you know, we did just hire somebody who's pretty sharp, a seasoned lawyer, which is nice, to help us process the growth spurt that we're experiencing at this moment. So
good, excellent.
And then the other side is just, you know, employee relations, kind of overseeing. I have an office manager that does a lot of the HR. It just came in to adjust my thermostat because it was
You're happy with
that? I think my face is flushed because it's like 85 degrees in my office.
Oh man.
So, you know, you handle all of that. And then there's, you know, there's always little issues that come up, like in any business. You know, so-and-so's out today. How, you know, who do you want to, you know, complete this project or that project from an administrative level? So, you know, that's that. I mean, if I had no cases, I would be busy still 8 hours a day doing that.
Mm. So you still have a big caseload in addition to operating, managing the firm.
Right. And I'm also the lead trial attorney for the firm. Trials are not easy, both physically, emotionally, and knowledgeable wise.
Sure.
I mean, I love trying cases. I love speaking to juries. I think I have, my track record shows I apparently have a talent for that. But I feel very comfortable speaking to, you know, 12 jurors in a box, even when, you know, if we lose this thing, my client's out of business because the damages are, you know, too high and he'll be bankrupt. That fire case, the restaurant fire case, it's a perfect example. I mean, the claim was well over his insurance policy limits.
Mm.
So if the plaintiff got their $2.5 million, he was done. He couldn't afford to pay that. He couldn't afford to pay the excess.
Right. Sure.
So I was very happy for him. He was practically in tears and thanked me. Wanted to remodel my house at no charge. And I was like, if I ever need stuff, you can give me a bid.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to do that. But I think he is a good contractor. I would have him work on my house.
Yeah.
There's other clients I represent where, you know, I don't think I'd have him work on my house. I've seen their work and there's reasons why they're getting sued.
Got it.
So.
Well, listen, I'm going to let you get back to work because it sounds like you're busy, but just sort of final thoughts you want to leave with the audience about, you know, your firm and the best way to connect with you.
Yeah, it's, you know, our firm, we do, you know, I described what I do. We also have other lawyers in the firm that do things more transactional wise in terms of business contracts, transactional stuff it's referred to. So, you know, we have our website at www.grayduffylaw.com. It describes all the lawyers here. In fact, that reminds me, I still got to add the new guy to the website. And, you know, all the practice areas that we specialize in. We have, you know, I'm in the Los Angeles-based office. Okay. We also have a Bay Area office for Northern California. So it's kind of a satellite office. There's, you know, three lawyers up there that regularly are involved up there. And I also, as managing partner, I'm responsible for that office too. So I'll visit from time to time. But mostly I just, you know, talk to the lawyers up there. And I do get a lot of cases that are venued up in the Bay Area, in those counties up in San Francisco and San Jose and Sacramento area. So we handle pretty much handle the entire state of California from San Diego to Sacramento. I've had a few cases even north of Sacramento where it's, you know, we refer to it as BFE. You know what that stands for?
Yeah. Actually, I don't.
No.
No.
the F in the middle is, you know. The
oh, get it. I get it now. Thank you. Okay, I'm with you.
Yeah. So, I don't want to offend any listeners, but yeah.
No worries. Got it.
But yeah, and it's, you know, so you can contact us through the website. You can Google me, my name, Michael Eisenbaum. And there's another guy, Michael Eisenbaum, that works for Disney, apparently. When I Googled myself, he also came up, but, you know, I come near the top. And apparently, because I am well known for property damage litigation, like if you have a house fire or a flood, or, you know, your neighbor's house catches your house on fire, things like that. I get calls all the time because people Google property damage attorney and my name comes up near the top. So
very good.
Yeah. So we try to help people. You know, a lot of people call, well, you know, my insurance, my auto insurance isn't paying what I think I should get for my car. It's totaled. I'm like, here's what you do. You know, I mean, I just a little bit of free advice there. And, you know, it's kind of good karma to put out there in the community. So if I can help somebody with just, you know, give them some advice over the phone, even though I don't know them, and they call seeking some help, I try to help when I can. And give them some advice that, you know, obviously hiring a lawyer can be an expensive process if you've got a serious litigation matter, and no insurance, or limited insurance as the case may be. So we help people out. A lot of our clients are, you know, private clients, private businesses that have legal needs. They all have legal needs one way or the other, whether it's, you know, advice on what type of entity they should be, you know, a corporation versus an LLC or a partnership. You know, there are tax benefits and legal benefits one way or the other, depending on the nature of the business and things like that. So we help our clients every which way in the civil law arena, not just litigation. Litigation is mainly what I do. I handle lawsuits. Whether I have to file it on behalf of a client or respond to it on behalf of a client. And like I said, probably 75% were on the defense side.
Yeah. Good. Excellent. Good. I appreciate it. Very interesting. Well, listen, I'll let you get back to work, but for everybody again, Michael Eisenbaum and Gray Duffy, this is sponsored by Emotion Track, which is a legal tech platform. And we help litigators like yourself prepare for mediation and trials with our Insights platform. So thank you again, Michael. Pleasure. Joy getting to know you. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. Great to be here. Thanks.